Hark, the herald angels sing, something, 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 king. I don't really know these words, because I don't celebrate Christmas, but we're here to do a podcast, and I'm gonna talk about the NSA and Sasquatch and a bunch of other things. Some of that was had to be right, right? I don't know Christmas carols. It's your guys' thing. The whole thing where you guys go door to door to your neighbors and sing carols to them? Do you guys all really do that? If any of you actually make it a habit around Christmas time to knock at your neighbor's door, like with your whole family standing around in the snow, and then when they open the door, you just launch into a Christmas carol? I mean, that's maybe got like a 30% chance of brightening their day. It's got an equally good chance of annoying the shit out of them, especially if they're not Christian. I don't know. I guess it's a nice gesture, but it's weird. Or maybe I'm just jealous nobody's ever gone caroling at my door. If I opened up the door, saw a family there singing me carols, it would probably brighten my day. It'd be very sweet. Alas, doesn't happen in Hollywood. I think people were afraid that somebody's going to open their door and greet them with, like, some sort of knife. That seems to happen in Los Angeles, at least in some parts of Los Angeles. I'm not even in the bad part of Los Angeles. I'm in Hollywood. Who am I kidding? If you're not from LA, I'm on, like, right on the border between good LA and bad LA. You go east even a little bit and suddenly you're in bad LA. You go west a little bit and you're in the area where Lindsay Lohan parties. I'm right on the cusp. Also, there's no white Christmases here. There's nobody bundled up in scarves. The whole caroling thing, I think, just doesn't happen for that reason alone. It just doesn't work in California. Maybe we don't have the same Christmas spirit you guys have. It's possible. I've been talking for a long time without saying who I am or what the name of this podcast is. This is Josh Figures It Out, the podcast where I figure out what my podcast is going to be about. Back for another round! My name is Josh, formerly Rodog of the Jason Ellis Show. And I guess just to start off, maybe I should talk about how my week's been going. It's the last time I checked in with you guys. It's been good. I don't know. I feel good. It could just be me telling myself that, but honestly, in my head, I feel like I'm creative. I'm getting shit done. I'm focused. I think that in a lot of respects, I still need to figure out exactly how to direct those creative energies. But it's a good sign when every day I've got an idea. Oh, I should be doing this. Oh, I should be doing this. I've got all these crazy ideas. I've lots of hands, lots of fingers, and lots of pots, if that makes any sense. It's just, what am I going to focus on first? Prioritizing, time management. And actually, you guys are going to be helping me out with that if you continue to listen to this podcast. But that's a hint for what's going to happen later in the episode. I've been making videos you guys might have seen for the 5-second rule. Those have been a lot of fun to make. Just finding footage on the internet, remixing it. At first, I was just going to share all that stuff on SoundCloud. But then, did you know that the most common website for sharing music is YouTube? And when I found that out, I was like, well, if I'm going to upload this stuff onto YouTube, I might as well have some video component to go with it. And that's where the idea for those just quick and dirty found footage remix music videos came from. The last one I did, Circle of Life, I got to cut up The Lion King. That actually came out really cool. There's a surprising amount of scary footage in The Lion King. The stuff where the hyenas are marching, it like evokes the Holocaust. There is depth in The Lion King. I've been writing about something that I can't, or, well, I can. I've been writing about something I don't want to tell you about yet. But I'll probably tell you guys soon. And then, you know, just lots of, like, I've had to refigure out my insurance situation. That's fun. Healthcare.gov. Actually, California has its own exchange. California Healthcare Exchange, yeah. I've been applying to jobs. I've been applying to a lot of jobs. What I have found out applying for jobs is that in 2013, pretty much every job application website is the same. It must all be some companies just licensing out their software, because no matter what company I'm applying for, you've got to fill out the same basic forms, answer the same basic questions, and send your information in to sit on a pile with hundreds of other resumes that will probably not get looked at. But first, they have to give you a unique username and password. And everybody has different rules for how their username and password has to work. Some places your username has to be 8 characters or more. Some it's got to be 10 characters or more and have a number in it. And sometimes your password has to have an uppercase and lowercase letter, but only alphanumeric characters. And sometimes it has to have an upper and lowercase letter and a number and a special symbol character. Why? I don't know. But as a result, I have to track all these different, slightly different combinations of usernames and passwords. And they are all slightly different. If they want me to add a special character, guess what? I'm just putting an exclamation mark on the end of it. I'm not going to invent an entirely new password out of scratch. I have better things to do with my time, believe it or not. So that's probably not good for people who want to hack me, because I'm basically just using my standard password and just putting password 111 exclamation point, capital letter, whatever you need me to do. Just get me out of here so I can fill in my resume information and on with my day. I don't know. In general, I'm in project mode. I've got a lot of different ideas for projects I want to work on in the near future, like putting out the album and making this podcast work and making a personal website. And so I'm really just driven to do all that stuff right now. And as long as I've got the drive, I say I'm going to ride that out as long as I'm feeling the creative energies, you know? The biggest mistake I could possibly make would be to treat time without a job as vacation time. Because then you're just like, oh, I could get up whenever I want. I can smoke as much weed as I want. I can eat as much crap as I want. I can take 2 naps if I wanted to. I could take 3 naps. But that kind of freedom, eventually you find yourself weeks later and you realize, wait, I'm just sleeping in and smoking weed all day every day. And that it's not a vacation anymore. That it just feels like you're trapped in some sort of weed cloud. That's kind of the last thing I want to happen. So if anything, I've been cutting down on the amount of weed, been trying to get up at a certain time every day, been trying to run every day, been trying to drink a green drink every day. I'm not always successful at all these things, but I'm successful a surprising amount of the time, and that's good enough. And I'm trying to, and I don't know, if I'm just alone the whole time, that's also a bad thing. So I'm trying to get out, trying to see people. I just went to a stand-up set. My friend invited, he was doing a set at the Comedy Store. And he invited me last minute. He said it was one of those things where you need to bring like 7 people or else you don't get to do a set. So I said, sure, what the hell? Probably good for me to get out, see some comedy and some friends. As it turned out, he got the time wrong, which meant that he didn't get to go on and I didn't actually get to see that many comedians. But the ones I did get to see at the Comedy Store, this was an emerging comics night. So there were a couple veterans, but it was mostly people who've done very little stand-up comedy or just getting their comedy career started. Seeing beginner stand-up comedy can be painful sometimes. This was better than the last couple of amateur stand-up comedy nights I've been to. These guys had clearly been working on their routine at least a little bit. They weren't just standing around the whole time being like, The worst is when people tell a joke and when it doesn't quite get the reaction they wanted, they'll be like, they tell the joke and then they're like, what? What? I guess everybody's asleep today. You know, and it's supposed to come off as self-deprecating, I guess. But what it really just comes off as is the comic blaming the audience for not finding the material funny. So it's just really sad and you feel like you're being pectored by insecure people for hours. This was not that bad, but it was still definitely unpolished and the pacing was weird, and compared to the pros, you can tell the amateurs just aren't quite there. The main thing I got out of going to the stand-up night was thinking, what is stopping me from trying to do stand-up? I've tried it a handful of times before. I think I've got a little bit of talent for it. I feel like I can write a set really well. As far as actually getting up there and delivering that set with confidence, that's something I need to work on. But why not work on it? I mean, there's so many stand-up open mics in LA. Maybe that's a way to go for me. Am I crazy? Do you guys think I could do a good stand-up set? what I might end up doing is trying to write one and then like perform it on this podcast to see what you guys think. Like I said last time, you guys are like my beta testers. So you're going to have to tell me whether my material is funny. And if it is funny, maybe I'll actually take it out to a club and try it out. Why the fuck not? It's kind of my slogan right now. So I don't know. I'm already thinking of ideas for bits. Like I said, my brain is moving a mile a minute these days. And speaking of, at the forefront of my mind has been this podcast and how I could improve and ways to make this podcast better and what exactly I want it to become. A lot of that based on your initial reactions, which have been really mostly positive. If I had to sum up the overall reaction to Josh Figures It Out episode 1, it would be not as horrible as I was expecting. Which I'm going to totally take that as a compliment. That's good. If I'm exceeding your expectations, even if you thought I was going to just shit myself out of the gate, I will take that. And it also means, of course, I've got room for improvement. Good. I got some good notes from you guys. You guys said I was too self-deprecating. Fair enough. From now on, I will only talk about how amazing I am and how awesome and motivated and talented and smart and sexy and funky and all those things. No more negative talk. No more negative self-talk. God, you guys sound like my therapist. Another note I got was too many ums and uhs. And how do I respond to this? My solution to that problem, you know, I guess would be And so on. And then I think probably the most common note I saw for episode 1 of the podcast was, have you thought about getting a co-host? And I have. It's on my mind. I might want to switch this up and do this with a co-host at some point in the future. But to start out, it was important that I do this totally stripped down. I mean, you've noticed I don't even have a theme song. I barely have, like, art on my page on the iTunes store. This is pretty much, to start out, just me talking in front of a mic. No bells, no whistles, nothing else but my voice solo. Because it kind of mirrors how my life has been stripped down a bit recently. 6 months ago, I had a job and a girlfriend. Right now, I have neither of those things. And that doesn't have to be a cause for alarm. Rather, that's a cause for self-reflection. It's a chance to figure out who I am without the trappings that I thought previously was a part of my identity. Who am I without those things? Look, I already know how to talk to a co-host. I've been talking to a co-host for my entire radio career so far. I'm good at counterpunching. I'm good at bouncing off of people. I'm good at riffing with people. You know what I'm not good at? Just talking in front of a microphone. I'm not sure if you can tell that, but that's still something I'm working on. You guys are pretty much just hearing me practice. And I'm going to try my best to make it entertaining for you guys. It doesn't change the fact that you're listening to me practice talking to myself. Last time I did this thing, Kevin was sitting on a couch right next to me, literally listening to the entire podcast. If I wanted to, I could have invited him up and said, hey, Kevin, join me and talk to me while I do my podcast debut. And I bet it would have been a really interesting conversation. I'm sure you guys would have loved it. But no, I'm not ready yet. So you don't get to hear that yet. Got it? Right now, it's just you and me, bub. It's just you and me, son. That's been my thing lately. I've been calling people son. You know what's really funny is calling an older woman son. It's confusing. Like, today for Christmas, if you're sitting down with your grandma and your grandma's like, can I offer you another plate of fried potatoes? And you say, yeah, give me some fried potatoes, son. It will confuse her. Try it. Anyhow, point is, stripped down on purpose, and it's because I kind of want to establish what my solo voice is like. It's a weakness. It's not something I'm naturally good at. But that's okay. Lean into my weaknesses. That's my philosophy. We are on a journey of self-exploration here. I'm sorry for not warning you about that ahead of time. Probably should have put a disclaimer on the podcast saying, so you know, if you listen to this, you're going to end up on a journey of self-exploration, whether you like it or not. But now you're here. You are on this journey with me. Enjoy the journey. Appreciate the journey. How many journeys do you get to go on in your lifetime? It's a journey of 1,000 miles, and it begins with the single step of you just listening right now from the comfort of your home or your car as I discover my essence. And before I get too new agey on you guys, I'm going to back off this subject and just let you know I might be adding a co-host at some point. I'm going to be adding segments. I'm going to get working on a theme song. I'm going to be adding all these elements in organically when the time is right, when it feels right. But first, just me. And now that I've established that, it's time to start talking about what this podcast is going to look like going forward. Like I said, I've got a lot of ideas for this thing, but for the average episode, for the standard episode, I'm going to be using a format, and I don't know if there's like an official name for this format, but I just call it a ramble. A ramble is just me talking about my life, talking about current events, talking about whatever's in my head. It's tried and true. It's real easy. Doesn't take a lot of setup. Mark Maron does at the beginning of his podcast. It's pretty much what Bill Burr's podcast is. Even Jason used to start every show with a ramble. It's classic. Here's an example. Here is what a ramble might sound like. I've been asked recently if I really believe in Sasquatch. Now that I'm off the Ellis show, was it all an act? I guess because I'm stripping myself down, because I'm laying it all bare, because I'm being completely, totally honest with you guys, I can tell you, I guess no, I don't believe in Sasquatch is the answer. How could there be just one animal? Sasquatch, if there was a Sasquatch, it would have died at this point, but yet people are still seeing it. It couldn't reproduce if there was just one Sasquatch. Where's the lady Sasquatch? There is not a Sasquatch. No, I believe that there are thousands and perhaps millions of Sasquatches in the North American forest. They are the missing link. And the reason we haven't seen any of these, despite their numbers, is because they have a super evolved camouflage reflex, which allows them to evade capture. These creatures have been observing us. They've been watching us as we've evolved into the Homo sapiens we know today, even though they've been around since caveman times. And they've been with us every step of the way. They are as smart as we are. They are possibly smarter than we are. They have their own culture, their own languages, their own way of life. Their numbers are a lot smaller than Homo sapiens numbers. But that does not mean that with strategy and with their super evolved camouflage reflex, of course, they could not take us over in a Rise of the Planet of the Sasquatches scenario, which is really a lot more believable than apes when you think about it. We keep apes in cages. We're clearly the master of the apes. It took some sci-fi mumbo-jumbo super brain gas to turn even one of those apes into a super genius. Sasquatches have been around for a while. They are most likely already super geniuses to have stayed out of sight of us for so long. So to me, that is a much scarier threat. On the other hand, Sasquatches might be peaceful. Maybe the Sasquatches would save us from ourselves. God knows, considering the current state of humanity, sometimes you think maybe Sasquatch would be a better leader than the leaders we have. I was thinking about this because I was taking a look at the Time Person of the Year picks, which came out a couple days ago as of this recording. Their Man of the Year was Pope Francis. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a totally solid pick. I don't follow the papacy that closely. The last guy seemed kind of German and creepy. This guy, Pope Francis, look, as everything I know about him, I like him. And not only is it cool that he's trying to be open to people who are outside of the traditional Catholic dominion, like non-Catholics, and opening it up for people of all classes, trying to make the Catholic Church a place for the poor. All that stuff is not only awesome, but it's also like a great PR move for the church. Catholic Church was just in such bad shape and just seemed to keep shooting themselves in the foot and becoming more and more exclusive. And this guy's message of inclusivity, I think, is really smart. Otherwise, there might not be a Catholic Church in 100 years. So I think that was a good pick. I was really intrigued by their second choice, the guy who was almost Person of the Year, which was Edward Snowden. Initially, I was really on the fence about Snowden. When the revelations first came out, I was like, wow, these revelations are insane. It's definitely stuff we needed to know. But I was also worried that he was putting too much of the spotlight on himself and trying to make the story all about him and his heroism. And he kind of seemed like a pompous douche. And so I was like, I mean, I kind of respect what the guy did, but I don't actually know if I like him personally. Maybe he should just suck it up and, you know, allow America to capture him instead of fleeing all over the world. At this point, though, at the end of the year, ever since Snowden settled in Russia, he's basically managed to take the light off of himself and make himself not the story. But we're still hearing about the NSA, and it seems like every week, every couple of weeks at least, there's some new report or new revelation that shows, wow, this was even worse than we thought. And it's not about Snowden anymore. It's about the NSA and the fact that the government is pretty much spying on all of us all the time. And I know that the NSA isn't technically doing anything illegal, but that's because the privacy laws we have in this country are woefully outdated. They were made in an era where people weren't having their entire lives online to be examined or hacked at the click of a button. In modern society, there is no way, really, to live without putting your personal information on the internet. For if you're gonna, you know, participate in e-commerce in any way, if you're gonna register for like unemployment benefits or insurance, like I've had to do recently, if you're gonna really do like almost anything, you will be directed to the internet and encouraged to put your personal information on the internet. And it's so easy to get hacked. Easier than almost anybody realizes. The Chinese hack us like multiple times a day and stealing information. We didn't need to worry as much about privacy when it was hard to get our personal information. But now some guy in a foreign country could just look up your username and password in that huge document of Adobe-packed passwords. And if he happens to get yours and find you, he could start running up your credit card. Or he could find some damaging information about you and use it to extort you or blackmail you. These things are all legitimate real threats that are now almost everyone is vulnerable to. And our modern laws don't really account for that. So where there's a vacuum in the law, what's happened is, starting with the Bush administration and continued by the Obama administration, they basically decided to move in where there happens to be a vacuum in the privacy laws and decide, okay, well, let's take as much information as we legally can, which happens to be a lot, way more than they should be taking. And every day there's a new revelation that shows people who thought, oh, there's safeguards. Well, no, they ignore those safeguards. Well, there's a court that has to authorize any sort of request for information. It turns out that court is just a rubber stamp, and they the judges of those courts face a lot of pressure to say yes to pretty much every request. Oh, they're just going after foreign citizens. Well, no, they're the incidental data they sweep up when they look at foreign citizens' records happens to contain information about a huge percentage of Americans who have done no illegal activity whatsoever, and yet the government can just look up their information. And if we happen, God forbid, to be in a future where, like, a president wants to persecute anybody who says something negative about the government, I don't think either Bush or Obama would do that, but who knows what would happen in the future. And if they have this giant database of all of our communication, they could start, you know, going after people essentially for thought crime. Depending on your political persuasion, you might say this is a fair trade-off because the NSA is also catching a lot of bad guys, and maybe we have to have our privacy eroded a little bit to make sure we can actually get the bad guys. That's arguable. I don't agree, but that is, you know, that's definitely something you can argue about. I think what is inarguable is the American people should have known about this and should have voted on whether this is the path we want America to go in. And that is why I think Snowden is a hero, because the government was just going to get away with it if Snowden didn't step in and risk his life and his reputation to say this is something that every American needs to know about. I think that's awesome. And I've come around on him. I actually do think he's kind of an American hero and would have made a fine person of the year. I think he would have been my candidate for person of the year. Although, hell, if I wanted to get cynical, I might have said that the person of the year was Justine Sacco. If you haven't been following this, she is a PR person for a company called IAC, which owns Match.com, OkCupid.com, College Humor, a lot of big internet properties. And she tweeted, she was flying to South Africa, and just before she got on the flight, an 11-hour flight, she tweeted, "Going to Africa. Hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding, I'm white." Now, that is that's a very, very offensive thing to say. It's possible if Anthony Jeselnik had said something like that, you just would have forgiven him and been like, shock humor, whatever. It's different when you're a PR person. How dumb are you? How do you not realize how that's going to look? Thing is, she only had 200 Twitter followers. I'm assuming mostly close friends of hers. Maybe she just assumed she could get away with kind of a shocking line like that, make people on her Twitter feed laugh. She got on this 11-hour plane. One of her 200 followers sent this tweet to the website BuzzFeed, who posted a little item about it and how crazy that tweet was. Immediately, this starts spreading all over the place. People tweeting, "Oh my God, this lady needs to get fired. What a racist, disgusting tweet. I'm horrified." That's all to be expected. I've seen those kind of PR blowups before. What I'm astonished by is the speed of this thing. Because all this shit went down before her 11-hour plane flight ended. Midway through this flight, suddenly the hashtag #HasJustineLandedYet is trending everywhere, worldwide, all over the place. There was one person who was even waiting at the airport and happened to, I think, get some like vines or some photos of her as she got off the plane waiting for her reaction, because in the span of that one plane flight, she went from posting a really off-color joke to 200 Twitter followers to being like the number one story in the world, and she's the only one who doesn't know it. Why do I think that potentially makes her the person of the year? In a very ironic sense, only because it demonstrates these stories that normally would have taken days to get any sort of traction just snowball so fast thanks to the power of Twitter and the fact that everyone can talk about these things and everyone is looking to be the guy who's ahead of the story. Nobody wants to be talking about the Justine Sacco thing once it's over, when she's already off the plane. To me, as somebody who's like trying to get Twitter followers or trying to put a podcast out there or add it to the other 650,000 podcasts that exist on the internet, it's intimidating to see this stuff. It makes me realize I really am just a drop in the bucket. It's a good thing that I just kind of love making radio and podcasts and music and all that for its own sake, and that I'm not actually expecting to become a breakout superstar from it. But yeah, that Time Person of the Year stuff, it's gimmicky. That year where they said, you are the person of the year, and there was just a big mirror on the cover. Man, cheese ball. I know, you're telling me I'm the person of the year? I can't believe it. I always knew I was special. I honestly do love this plank of the year stuff, though. I'm addicted to these year-end lists. It's almost my favorite part of December every year, is seeing people run down the year and evaluate it. I think it's just part of why I love Christmas in general. The year is ending, and now everybody is reflecting on the 12 months that was. We're actually taking a step back and, like, evaluating what was good about this year, what was bad about this year. Let's figure out what we want to get rid of and what we want to hold on to. And I think that's kind of where the warm, fuzzy feelings of this season comes from. It's not, and I mean, yes, I'm saying this as a non-Christian, but I don't think it's just because Jesus, our Lord and Savior, was born in a manger so many years ago, especially because it didn't actually happen around this time of year, according to historians. It's because this period towards the end of the year is a period where people are just thinking about self-reflection and what really matters and the people who matter in your life. And so spending time with family and friends. I don't know. Maybe I'm a sap. But I like the idea of everybody is moving, and then around Christmas time they get to stop and just think about how nice it is to be alive and the great things we have. And I want you guys to think about it this Christmas. When you're out with your squabbling family, or you're disappointed about some gift you didn't get. Maybe you wanted the PlayStation 4 and you got an Xbox One, and you're like, duh, Bob! Wanted the PlayStation 4, you're so stupid! This is the time for thinking about what really matters. Does this game console really matter to you? It does, who am I kidding? Okay, video games are as important as family. You got me. The other reason I love this time of year is all the good movies finally come out. And I've now seen a couple. I just recently saw American Hustle. American Hustle was excellent. There's some really depressing movies that come out this time of year, too. 12 Years a Slave, I know, is the Oscar frontrunner. I saw it. I get it. Slavery is a really serious subject, so you're making a really serious movie about slavery. But it kind of, when you're watching it, it just seems like the point of the movie is slavery sucked really, really hard. It was really awful, and we did really terrible shit to these guys, which I knew. I didn't necessarily need to see it drawn out like that. It was very well made. It was very well acted. It was really pretty heartrending. But look, if you're going to ask me a year from now if I'm going to reach for that or Django Unchained, I will probably reach for Django. Less historically accurate, but, you know, there's jokes. I need a little bit of that. American Hustle is full of jokes. It's pretty much a straight-up comedy. It's a long movie, but it flows really well. It's very, very Scorsese-like in that sense. It's just boom, 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 and the plot twists build upon plot twists, and it's really well acted. Everybody is having a lot of fun. The costumes are great. The hairstyles are great. Christian Bale put on like 20 pounds and has a pot belly, but he's doing some really just great subtle work in the lead. Bradley Cooper was bored to play assholes, and he's a fantastic asshole. Really entertaining. Still not my favorite movie of the year, though. My favorite movie of the year so far has to be Inside Llewyn Davis. There's a couple reasons for that. Look, my favorite directors are the Coen brothers. They have made many of my favorite movies. But it's been a while since a Coen Brothers movie was my absolute favorite movie of the year. Probably hit home on some more personal levels also, considering this is about a struggling musician who just lost his partner and is now trying to make a living on his own in the entertainment industry, bouncing around from couch to couch, playing gigs, grinding it out, and hoping that someone notices him and he can get a career going. Perhaps something about that character description hit home for me. Of course, the character Llewyn Davis is very moody and very prickly, a lot pricklier than I am, I think. Amazingly well acted by a guy named Oscar Isaac. I recognized him from Drive, But yeah, I haven't actually seen him in a lot of movies, but he's really good in this. The songs, I can't get out of my head. They're really, the movie is sad, but it's also funny. It's the kind of movie that will stick with you. And you'll keep thinking about it. And just a really indelible character portrait. And something new from the Coen brothers. I've never seen them this sentimental, this willing to get emotional, this attached to their characters. It makes an interesting comparison with A Serious Man, one of their more recent movies, which I also loved, which is about another guy who lots of bad things happen to. But they're, in that movie, they maintained a distance from the main character, and they seem to be kind of casting judgment on him and how passive he is. And in this one, they're really clearly on the side of their main character. And as much as he's kind of an asshole who drives people away from him, he is also, they clearly connect to something in him. Maybe it's his striving. Maybe it's the fact that he's a true artist. Not as much of a typical good time at the movies as American Hustle was, but I think it had a little bit more depth. One more thought on Christmas. Why is the cliched worst gift you can get socks? That's been a staple I've always seen in movies and TV is the kid, I don't know, expecting like a Red Ranger BB gun or something, opening up a package and getting socks. Being like, aw, socks! What's so bad about socks? My family seems to love getting socks. Like my aunt opens up a package of like novelty socks with dogs on them. She'll be like, ooh, dog socks! Be really excited about it. I've seen whole stores devoted to socks. Just wall upon wall of socks. I have a theory why people hate socks so much. And I think it's because they're so rarely seen. They're almost always covered by shoes. Sometimes you wear shoes and socks, and then you can't see the socks. Sometimes you wear like sandals or shoes without socks. Sometimes you're barefoot. You're very rarely just in socks. I guess underwear is also rarely seen. But if you're seeing someone's underwear, then that probably means you're in for sexy times. If you're seeing someone's socks, that just means you're in for sweaty foot smell. And really, why would you get anybody's socks? A sock seems like it's a personal thing. You should buy your own socks. You know what socks you need. Why haven't we been able to make shoes without socks? It's 2013. It's almost 2014. Come on, guys. Think about how much money we could save if we didn't have to make socks anymore. If we just made shoes that didn't get stinky and could wick the sweat away. I assume that's the reason you need socks, right? So that your shoes don't get all sweaty and footy? Let's just make sweat-resistant shoes. Eliminate the sock entirely. This is a goal that should be achievable. We might not be able to get a man on Mars by 2030. I think we can invent shoes without socks by 2020. There you go. That's my ramble. My first ramble. What did you think about that ramble? I'm sure you will let me know at Radio TFB on Twitter. Now, some episodes of the podcast, Josh Figures It Out going forward, will be just a ramble like that. Some episodes will be a ramble followed by a more structured segment, a more normal segment, like the one we're just about to launch into right now. But there's going to be some episodes that are more like stealth pilots, I guess. I've got a number of ideas for shows that I want to do, for like whole different podcasts that I want to do. And I figured instead of starting those as separate podcasts, I would do a stealth pilot doing an episode of this podcast that functions as a pilot for some future podcast I might want to do. Basically, long-form podcast ideas that could potentially turn into shows all their own, but that I want to try out first on this podcast. Some of these ideas are going to take a little more time to put together. You know, the beauty of a ramble is I just kind of write down a few things I want to talk about and then start riffing from there. These might take more prep time. It might take me assembling some guests or assembling some very specific research or topics I want to talk about or write things. Here's what's up right now. I've got 10 ideas for special episodes that I want to do of Josh Figures It Out. I'm going to tell you guys those 10 ideas. And then, once you've listened to all of them, you're going to go on Twitter, at Radio TFB, and tell me which idea you think I should try first. And then that is the idea I will start working on. This will all make sense once I start reading my podcast pilot ideas. I got 10. So we're going to run through them. Right now, on the podcast. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the 5-second rule. Now, you've heard me talk about it on the last podcast. This is my album. The album that I started working on over a year ago, and it's been done for a while. The only word I could use to describe this album is insane. This album is bonkers. It's crazy. It's like something that an insane man made. It means that maybe I am insane for having made it. And if you don't, and if that description isn't appealing to you, then forget it. Move on. But if that does sound appealing to you, then I think the 5-second rule will shock and delight you. And it's amazing value, too. For I'm going to be selling it on Bandcamp for $7. Pretty cheap. And for $7, you get 40 songs. Not 14, 40. The entire album runs 60 minutes long. 40 songs, 60 minutes. What a deal. Amazing value. I worked really hard on this thing. Like I said last time, I think it's the best music I've ever made. And if you want to, you can pay more than $7. Bandcamp offers that option. So if you've been thinking about me this holiday season for whatever reason and would like to support me, I think this is the best way to do it. You can throw a little bit of money my way while I'm kind of transitioning to whatever the hell I'm going to do next. And as a bonus, you're going to get 40 songs that I wrote. 40 songs that I wrote and recorded and sang on. I'm singing on most of them. Sometimes I'm rapping. Plus you'll get album art and a lyric booklet that I'm currently working on making. And maybe even a bonus song for people who buy the entire album. You're going to get some stuff. And it's super cheap. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If nothing else, you'll listen to it once and be like, oh my God, what the hell was Josh thinking? But at the very least, that'll be an entertaining hour. For less than the price of a movie ticket. Think of it like that. Look, it's guaranteed entertainment. I will tell you that for sure. The 5-second rule is dropping New Year's Day. I will link to it on Twitter when that link is available. I just want you guys to know about it now. 5-second rule, 5-second rule, 5-second rule. Moving on. Let's start talking about ideas for podcast pilots. And remember, once I've said all these, tweet me at Radio TFB and tell me which one you would like to see me do. Idea number one is something I've been calling the futurist. You guys might know that I just have a long-time interest in futurism. What is futurism? It is the study of what humanity is going to be like in the future. Talking robotics. Talking biotechnology. I'm talking the singularity. I'm talking about, will we be able to put our brains in robot bodies? I'm talking about, will we be able to travel to outer space and find aliens? I'm talking about, will humanity as we know it even exist in 100 years? Or will we have fused into some sort of hive consciousness like the Borg? I'm talking about, are we going to create cell phones that are powered by black holes or something in the future? Crazy quantum black hole computers. Will we become cell phones in the future? And because I'm more of an enthusiast on futurism than somebody who actually knows what the hell they're talking about, for this, I would be interviewing an actual scientist or engineer. The way the futurist would work if it was a podcast all its own is each week I would take a different topic about the future. For instance, what will transportation look like in the future? Will we all be in automated cars? Or will the fact that cars are automated mean that we won't even have to have like roads anymore and there's just drones whipping us back and forth? Or will we have teleporters? Wouldn't that be awesome? Or jetpacks? Come on. And then I would be talking to a scientist who would tell me that jetpacks are probably never going to happen. Same with teleporters. Or maybe he would tell me that all my crazy future dreams are going to come true. Either way, this is the podcast where I'm talking about the future of humanity and cool science shit. That's number one. Number two is a concept you guys are probably familiar with called New Music Tuesdays. Now, real quick, here's the issue with doing that on a podcast instead of on the radio. Radio, they already have a system set up where they can pay fees every time they play a song on the radio. The radio station does, in fact, pay a fee to, like, Nirvana every time they play a Nirvana song. And those fees are relatively inexpensive for radio stations. They are very expensive and hard to obtain if you're just a webcaster or a podcaster or an internet radio station. So there are some copyright issues doing music, but there are fair use exceptions. Basically, I've got a couple, I'm about to talk about a couple of different music-related ideas, but what I have found doing some research is, as long as I only play 30 seconds or so of a song, and as long as I'm actually offering criticism or commentary on that song, then it can be considered fair use. If I'm playing all of Smells Like Teen Spirit, then that's obviously not fair use. If I decided to just use Smells Like Teen Spirit as my theme song and then not actually talk about it, I just wanted to kind of use it as incidental music, also not fair use. But if I'm actually talking about the Nirvana record after I play a short clip of it, that is, it's educational and it's criticism. And I believe, and I mean, fair use laws are not cut and dry, but I believe that would qualify. So New Music Tuesday would essentially be, just like you've heard it before, a roundup of the new releases from that week, but I'm only playing a short clip, and then I would be talking about that clip and talking a little bit about the album, maybe talking about the band, and then I'll move on to another album and play another clip. It would not sound exactly the same as we've done New Music Tuesday in the past, but I think I could offer a similar experience. Idea number three is actually the idea I've developed the most, though you guys probably don't know it. It's an idea called the Bad Music Show. Some of you guys, if you're familiar with podcasts at all, probably know that there's lots of bad movie podcasts out there, and they're very popular. The Flophouse, How Did This Get Made, shows like that, which I really love, actually. I listen to those all the time. It's fun to talk about bad movies. What I've noticed is there's a huge hole, though, is that there are very few podcasts. There are no podcasts that I know of that focus on bad music. This is an idea I had a while ago, and I liked it so much. I recorded a pilot for the Bad Music Show that I attempted to get Sirius to pick up, and they didn't bite, and it was a little rough, definitely, but I think the basic idea is sound. Basically, the way this would work is I would get a panel of guests together, maybe three of my friends. This is how we did it on the pilot I recorded, and then we start out and we talk about one bad artist for that episode. The artist I picked for the pilot was Michael Bolton. So we dove into the Bolton discography and played some of his quote-unquote greatest hits, tried to decide whether we appreciated him ironically or thought he was legitimately really good or if he was just hard to take at all. Where do I stand personally on Bolton? I can appreciate him ironically. He has a great, great, very constipated voice. It's got passion. You can tell because he sings like this all the time. And then the other idea I did on that pilot was, after we all talked about Michael Bolton to our heart's content, I asked each of them to bring in one of their favorite recent pieces of bad music. So we kind of did like a bad song roundtable where we talked about their favorite bad music. I think it was actually a lot of fun. It was rough, but we got some funny material out of it. So if you want to hear us try the Bad Music Show again, that would be number three. Number four, this is my last music-related idea. This is something called the History of Music. And this is based on me getting really into music from the 50s and music from the 40s lately. I've been listening to a lot of swing and big band and old-school jazz and ragtime. A lot of it is fascinating. The recording quality is really bad, and the further you go back in music history, the more and more alien it sounds to modern ears. But in many ways, you also realize that a lot of this pop music really does move in cycles. And you hear a lot of ideas and a lot of interesting themes just spring up over and over again. You know, music gets crazier and more psychedelic, and then it gets more stripped down and back to the basics. And then it builds itself up, strips itself down over and over again kind of throughout pop history. And so the idea behind the history of music would be, if I did it as a full podcast, episode one would focus on, say, medieval classical music. Then episode two would move on to more modern classical music. And then maybe we spend a couple of episodes on early 20th century music, and then get into the 20s and the 30s. And then around the time we get into the 50s, we start breaking it down year by year. So I would do an entire episode on the music of 1950, and then a whole episode of the music of 1951, 52, 53, so on through the 60s and 70s, 80s, 90s, until we get to today. I added it up in my head. I think that give me 120 or so episodes, and I could get all the way through the history of music. That's obviously very, very ambitious. But if we were to start down that road, I could probably do a really interesting hour or so on classical music. So if you want to hear that, that's option number four. Idea number five, this is my most meta idea I came up with, is called Podcast Within a Podcast. And if there's a lot of people listening who are aspiring podcasters, this is the idea for you, because here's how this would work. You all send me your 15 to 20 minute podcasts. It would have to be around that range. It couldn't be shorter than 10. It couldn't be longer than half an hour. A short podcast that you guys have recorded. My podcast would be, I open up, I talk a little bit about my life, and then I play the podcast you sent me. And then I have the person who made that podcast in the studio, or maybe we just do it as a phone call or something, I don't know. And then after I play their podcast inside of my podcast, I interview them about the making of their podcast and how they think it went. And I tell them my personal opinions. Maybe I give them a little bit of criticism. Podcast Within a Podcast. This is the inception of podcast ideas. If you're into that, that's idea number five. Idea number six, got a feeling is going to be your guy's favorite. This one is a call-in podcast. This is pretty much a direct ripoff of one of my favorite podcasts. If you know the comedian Chelsea Peretti, she does a podcast called Call Chelsea Peretti, where she just answers phone calls from people and chats with them. She's very, very funny. She is one of absolutely, just her laugh alone makes her one of my favorite comedians. She's just a breath of fresh air. So if you've not checked out her podcast, you absolutely should. When I say I'm stealing her idea, I'm only doing it because I think if I did it, it would be totally different. I would be taking the same basic idea of setting up like a Skype line and telling you guys, hey, call in Monday at 5 o'clock. And you will get on my podcast, and then you'll hear the results in a couple days. I'm taking that same basic idea, but obviously, you know, it's me, and it's my sense of humor, and it's me talking to you guys, so it would play out totally differently. So if you're the kind of person who wants to hear your voice on my podcast, I'm guessing number six is the option you will pick. And I think there might be a few of you guys out there who like the idea of calling me and harassing me for some reason. So there's your chance! I am reaching the end of this CD, which means I need to take a brief interlude. Okay, we're back. Where were we? I think that was number six. Now, number seven. This is going to make maybe 0.5% of my audience happy. if that. There's some I have some very nerdy interests, which I've talked about on the Yellow Show before, but I have some interests that are so nerdy that I can't even bring myself to talk about it on the Yellow Show. But I will give you the chance here if you want to. I'm talking about Magic the Gathering, which is a collectible card game that I have collected many cards of, and I follow fairly closely, and I love to play. There might be a few of you guys who actually would enjoy listening to me talk about Magic the Gathering for an entire podcast. If you're one of those 30 or 40 people, and you want to hear my thoughts on the new cards from Theros, my predictions for what's going to be in Born of the Gods, what I think of the new mechanics. So far, I really like Devotion. I think Monstrosity's got some potential. If you want to hear about my cube that I've been building, any of that, that would be Magic the Gathering podcast, option number 7. Option number 8 is kind of a weird idea and kind of hard to explain. If you've listened to... I did a bit a couple of times on the Ellis Show, which is kind of a... It was like a survival bit. I framed it, I think, where Ellis, Tully, and Kevin crashed to the wilderness and had to figure out how to survive. And I kind of functioned as the dungeon master, so to speak, and I was leading them through the scenario and asking them questions and giving them options and trying to lead them back to civilization and see if they could. This would work kind of like that. It's like it's a trapped in a room scenario. I'm there with a couple of guests, and when we start the show, I tell them that they are trapped in this room with me. And if they want to escape, they are going to have to use their wits and figure out how to get out. They'll be saying things like, look north, and I'll be telling them west to the north, and they'll say, go north, and then they will walk to the north. Or they'll say, open door, and I'll tell them what happens if they open that door, what's behind that door. Maybe they'll find a key, and then they can say, pick up key. This is basically a radio version of an old text adventure game. And it would require me writing the text adventure, writing a puzzle game that people would be solving during the podcast. Maybe that's completely insane. That's probably my craziest idea and the one that would take the most work to do, and I don't even know if I totally understand it or if it would work at all. But if you're a fan of old text adventure games and enjoy seeing me as a dungeon master asking people impossible questions who have no idea what's going on, it could be an entertaining train wreck. That's option number 8. Option number 9 would require me getting a tape recorder and walking around to part of LA I've never been in and just recording my thoughts. LA is huge, and there's a lot of parts of LA I've never been in. Maybe I go down to, like, Long Beach. I've never been to Long Beach. And I just walk around describing what I see, describing my thoughts about Long Beach and the people I run into, the food I eat, the parks I walk through. And then maybe I'm just like I'm laying around and I'm kind of just describing my thoughts. Maybe I smoke a little weed before I go and I just babble whichever stoned things I come up with into the microphone. Maybe I get into some crazy misadventures in Long Beach, I don't know. But the idea is like recording a podcast while walking around a strange place. And that's option number 9. Finally, there's option number 10. This was suggested to me by a guy on Twitter, and I don't know if he was joking, but I actually think it's kind of brilliant. He had the idea of me recording a podcast of my dad. You guys might know my dad. He's done a couple of guest appearances on The Yellow Show. He's done a little bit of radio in his own right. He used to host like TV Talk on KCRW, if you're a SoCal guy. He is very funny. We have great talks, and he's very, very outspoken on things like religion and politics. It would probably actually be a really interesting show. I think he was kind of born to be a podcaster and doesn't even realize it. So that's option number 10, is me doing a show with my dad. And those are my 10 best ideas. And I believe it or not, I have even more ideas than that. Such as, like, what would Jaegerbeard hosting a podcast look like? But I'm not ready for that quite yet. I want to start with one of those 10 ideas. You've got to tell me which one. Is it The Futurist, where I talk about the future? Is it New Music Tuesdays? Is it The Bad Music Show? Is it The History of Music Show? Is it The Podcast Within a Podcast, where I review your podcasts? Is it The Call-In Show, where you guys can call me and harass me? Is it Magic the Gathering Cast, where I talk about Magic the Gathering for anybody who cares? Is it The Text Adventure Show, where I tell random people they're trapped in a room and they try to talk their way out? Is it The Travelogue Show, where I walk around interesting parts of LA recording my thoughts? Or should I do a podcast with my dad? Those are my 10 ideas. At Radio TFB on Twitter, vote for what you want to see me do next. That has been episode 2 of Josh Figures It Out. Holy moly. Really, I'm from where I'm sitting right now, I wonder how that went. I wonder if it sounded good. I'm not supposed to be self-deprecating, I forgot. That was amazing. That was maybe the greatest podcast that not only have I ever made, but that has ever been made. It may be the greatest single piece of art that has ever been created, was this episode of this podcast. That's what I'm thinking right now. And I'm super smart, super attractive, and super talented, and everything I touch turns to gold. Nothing bad will ever happen to me ever again. Yay! So, next week, tune in. It's going to be coming out, like, on New Year's Day. Not coincidentally, the day the 5-second rule comes out. And maybe I'll be talking a little bit about the 5-second rule on this podcast. I will probably be rambling a little bit as well. But the big thing I'm going to be talking about next week is my music picks for 2013. Yes. I have been going over my 2013 playlist obsessively recently. I have finally narrowed it down to the 36 songs that are going in the Ultimate Playlist. What is the Ultimate Playlist, you ask? I'm talking about it next time. For now, just know I'm going to be talking music. I'm going to be talking new music, and I'm going to be going over one of my personal musical highs from the last year. It's Christmas, you guys. Merry Christmas. And I mean that. Love you guys. I mean that too. I do. You guys are the best. And I had a lot of fun recording this. Podcasting is fun. I can see the appeal. I can see why there are so many of these things. But now, it has to end. For now, I will be back next week. Until next time, peace and love, guys.